When disputing with Eastern Orthodox, often one will hear from them a very common trope. And this is the trope that Latins use forgeries, that we have made a lot of forgeries, and that a lot of our doctrines are almost solely upheld by forgeries. So doing this video is, for me, a bit ironic, because I really despise this whole argument from forgeries. Because for many reasons, a lot of them aren't really forgeries. They're misattributions, or they are of some other ancient variation. For example, Contrinomian Book 4 and 5, it's something which was anciently used, Pseudo-Dionysius, so-called, something which was anciently used, but attributed to a different author. So I really don't like getting into the whole forgery dispute. But this is actually a case of something that I think is a genuine forgery. And because, well, genuine forgery, that's kind of ironic, but I think this is something which is actually not from the pen of St. Gregory the Theologian. And it's something that I've never seen an Orthodox apologist not use. I've seen almost every single one of them use. And actually, it ends up grounding the reason that I do this is because this ends up grounding their entire narrative of the history of Eastern theology when it comes to the procession of the Spirit. So what is this text? What is this text right here? It's this one from Oration 34:10. And it reads in the Brown and Swallow translation, which is going off of the Migney edition. It says, all that the Father has belongs to the Son except causality, and all that is the Son's belongs to the Spirit except his sonship. Now, what I want to be clear about is that, personally, I don't think this is actually a problem in itself, but the Orthodox are going to argue from this text, they're going to say that with Maximus's letter to Marinus, which has its own textual problems, but that's a story for a different day, and a text from St. John of Damascus's De Fide, where Aetios is denied to the Son and predicated alone to the Father. And then they'll further argue that Aetios, or cause, is taken in the sense of principium, that is something which flows in a general sense from another. They're going to conclude from all this, from these certain terms which are used, that St. Gregory, St. Maximus, and St. John of Damascus are explicitly denying the Filioque, because they say, well, the Father alone is cause, the Son's not cause, and from this text that the Father gives all to the Son except causality. They're going to conclude from this that these theologians deny the Filioque. And really, the whole crux of this argument rests on Maximus, which, as I mentioned, letter to Marinus is... not all modern scholars agree that it's something which is genuine, but I personally think is genuine. But first, I think I was a bit cheeky in naming this the anti-Filioque forgery, because I personally don't even think that this denies the Filioque. So ordinarily, how I would respond would be by distinguishing the premise that Aetios means principle. I don't think it means principle. I think that it can mean principle, and that in some theologians it does mean principle, for example, St. Gregory of Nyssa and St. Basil. But I think in other cases, it's going to mean something like a primordial source or a first cause, if we want to put it in that language, which if you want to hear more about this, you can find this in my rebuttal to my debate with, in my debate with David Erhan. I spend a few minutes talking about this in a lot more detail and with quotations. But I think what this does do, even while I don't think that Oration 34:10 is necessarily against the Filioque, I think that the fact that it is something which is not genuine actually strengthens this response that I normally give. So... yeah, so that's the same thing I said. Okay, so first, what is the evidence behind the fact that this is a forgery? So that the fact that all that the Father has belongs likewise to the Son except causality. What's the proof that that's a forgery? So what we can look at is first, any major modern critical edition of St. Gregory's works is going to mention this issue. I just want to be clear. And I think this actually provides some serious issues, and we can question the honesty and the scholarly rigor of somebody like Shishensky from the fact that he doesn't mention this at all. So since the first major modern critical edition of St. Gregory's works, which is the Mignet edition, textual scholars have noted that the phrase plain te citias, so except for causality, isn't a universal reading. So, of course, some manuscripts have it, obviously, but not all of them have it. And they state that not a few of the texts have plaintes agenesias, which means except for unbegottenness. So, just is the negation of genesias, I think, generated. So, unbegotten, ungenerated, ungenerate, if you want to put it, or ingenerate, rather, I think is the normal English usage. So most, so according to Mignet, and this is working back in the 18th century, there are the, he says that all the English manuscripts and then some of the Vatican manuscripts are consulted and have this reading. But what you get once you get into the 19th century is something interesting. So Lamer's 1864 edition, and this actually kind of becomes like standard of the 19th century. Everybody just assumes that, Agenesias is the authentic reading of this text. So actually, I think I want to go back just to read it in the other way, how it would be in the genuine version. So all that the Father has belongs to the Son except unbegottenness, and all that is the Son's belongs to the Spirit except his sonship. So except unbegottenness would be this reading, which obviously Latins can say, yeah, obviously that's true. So in Lamer's 1864 edition, he says, instead of reading aitias, cause, it should be read as agenesias, unbegotten, both based on better known manuscripts and parallel passages from the same theologian. So what's interesting is there's actually a modern edition, which there's soon supposed to be, and I've been patiently waiting for this. There's the Corpus Christianiorum, I think it's Corpus Christianiorum. They're doing a, yeah, it is, Syris Graeca. They're doing a new critical edition of all of Gregory of Nazianzus's works. Unfortunately, they haven't gotten to this yet, but fortunately for us, there was actually a 1985 French edition, which gave a critical Greek text going back through the manuscript tradition, which I'm sure the 2020 whatever edition, once they get done with it, is going to just follow the same reading. But this 1985 edition by Claudio, I can't pronounce that last name. He's French, you know. He went through this and he confirmed what textual scholars had basically said for centuries at this point, which was that aitias does not belong in the text, and that Mignet made a mistake on this point. So I have the screenshots right here just to prove I'm not making anything up. So you go to the, let's say, that fourth line right there. Fourth line, third word, fourth word, and fifth word. That's plain, except, tes, that's the article, so the. And then agenesias, so unbegottenness. So except from begottenness, right there. And then also I screenshotted the French edition as well. I do not read French with any accuracy, but you can see on that second line, it says the same thing. So I'm not making any of this up. So this is the modern editions of it. The 1985 French edition has my reading. You can actually, it's on archive.org. So if you want to go and get it, it's Discours 32 to 37. So you can go and look at it yourself if you want. You can look at all the notes and whatever. So now what are the extrinsic witnesses? Because it's not just the manuscript tradition that proves this. So St. Gregory's other writings actually prefer the phrase. And I think this is going to be something very important that we need to consider. So the exclusive use of aitias is never used by St. Gregory or for that matter, any of the other Cappadocians. It's just never used. None of them ever give this exclusive sense. So if Oration 34:10 happens to be genuine, in the reading that the Orthodox normally give to it, it would be the only instance. Actually, it would be not only the only instance among the Cappadocians, amongst his contemporaries, it would be the only instance for centuries. And then that's assuming that St. Maximus's letter to Marinus is genuine. And if not that, perhaps all the way until St. John of Damascus. So really, what we see is it's not really strong for the exclusive use. But on the other hand, the exclusive use of unbegotten is actually used frequently by St. Gregory. So an example of this is in Oration 41. All that the Father has, the Son has also, except the being unbegotten. And it's the same exact phrase. And what's interesting is that actually this phrase, this specific phrase, not merely like equivalent, but no, this specific phrase with this specific grammatical form actually becomes a classical phrase in Greek theology. Whereas the aitios phrase, it's never, to my knowledge, ever repeated in any other author. So the use is just simply anachronistic. Until St. Maximus, or if Letter Marinus isn't genuine, then until St. John of Damascus, this exclusive use would just be St. Gregory and nobody else for centuries. I've never seen any Orthodox point out anything before St. Maximus and after St. Gregory the theologian that follows the same usage. So he would just be a single guy out there just kind of using it. And then also his contemporaries, they feel completely free to call the Son aitios. They don't have the same disposition that apparently St. Gregory has. So this would be really weird. And St. Basil, Contronomium 3.1, which I've already shown the authenticity of it. And then, or at least if one wants to say that this isn't authentic, it's been used since maybe even before the time of St. Maximus, according to the people that don't agree that it's authentic. So it's very ancient reading. So the use of aitios still isn't in the exclusive sense. And also, indisputably, St. Gregory of Nyssa in Contronomium 142 feels free to call the Son aitios. So the use is completely anachronistic. But what's really interesting is the fact that this becomes the plantes agenesias. This becomes a phrase which is frequently used by theologians, Greek theologians. So I have seven instances right here, and this is kind of, I gave up after finding seven of them. This is seven instances right here from St. John of Damascus using this exact phrase. When he does talk about aitios in the exclusive sense, he doesn't use it in the same form as supposedly St. Gregory of St. Gregory the theologian said. So really nobody is mentioning this phrase until the 13th century. Nobody's mentioning it and using it in an apologetic way, using it in their Trinitarian theology until the anti-Beccus era. So, but on the other hand, people are using the except for unbegottenness quite frequently, which you can look at and read those phrases from St. John of Damascus if you want. Also St. Cyril in his De Sancta Trinitate, although some say possible misattribution, yet it's something which is ancient, so it still witnesses to the Trinitarian usage of the Catholic Church. And then also we have the historical witness of Patriarch Beccus of Constantinople in the 13th century. He witnesses that the anti-unionists actually added the phrase. And then he demonstrates the disunity of the interpolation with St. Gregory's other writings, and then witnesses to the near ubiquity, so the almost universality of the manuscript tradition in his day, which modern scholarship has vindicated Beccus on, which if you want to actually read this in his writings, if you read Greek or Latin, his second oration on his deposition, and then his fourth book and sixth chapter of his letters to, I think it's his big letter to Constantium. So why does it matter? What does this mean? I think this is an important question. So first, I think what is important for at least me is, and my reading of aitios, is that this demonstrates that the restriction of aitios merely follows the development of the Greek language and its restriction of the term to primordial causality. So if we say, let's say the letter Marinus is real, And that Saint, obviously Saint John of Damascus, there's no question about him, his usage being genuine. Why is there this change? Why is there this change? So if Oration 34:10 is something which is, let's say, genuine, the Orthodox reading of it is genuine, then yeah, sure, we do have this usage we can compare to creation, as I did before. It's a little less smooth, of course, but it's obviously not out of the out of the ordinary or anything like that. But really, when we see this restriction occurring during Maximus's day and during John of Damascus's day, what is really, really fun is that if almost completely follows the restriction that Bessarion witnesses in Byzantine literature, which Bessarion, he's known for his literary, his knowledge of literary history, Byzantine literature. So this is something that he knows about, he witnesses still, that there's a later restriction of Aetios in Byzantine literature that follows the development of the Greek language, that follows kind of this restriction in amongst the theologians, amongst Saint Maximus and Saint John of Damascus. So this provides a much, much smoother transition. And this should already be something that's evident from the fact that there are no authors between this supposed text from Saint Gregory and then the possibly genuine text of Saint Maximus that witness in this regard. There's no authors. They use it in an exclusive sense like this. It just isn't there. So this should be evident that there's probably something going on in the Greek language that's changing rather than, God forbid, a change in theology. Or the Orthodox way is just to say, well, actually, the whole time they were using it, which just isn't true. And then also something that I think is very important is this shows that Shishensky's work is just sloppy. His work is sloppy. Because if somebody is well-read in this dispute, what I'm saying here isn't out of the ordinary. This is something that the theologians of the Second Leon period and the Florentine period of these debates, they noted this. Both Beccus and Bessarion, who are the two main guys, they both note this. So it's obvious that Shishensky either didn't read these guys, which is weird because he wrote about them, or... because he wrote about the dispute in disputes in the Filioque's controversies, or he knows about it and he just didn't add it because that's inconvenient for his argument, which is, I think, even worse. And then this also shows that he's not checking from the most recent critical editions of the text that he's quoting, which is also pretty bad in scholarship. And then also just shows that he's just not familiar with Roman Catholic literature in the 19th and early 20th century, because these guys noted as well when they're defending the Filioque. So he's just not read in the neo-scholastic tradition either, which isn't actually too surprising, which should be sad because he was, as many note, Roman Catholic while he wrote this book. So he didn't even know his own tradition. He didn't know important points of the dispute that were made. And that's should be a really big hit to Shishensky's work and the value of his work, because it just shows that he didn't do his homework that well. Or he just didn't mention it, which is even worse. And then the third point is that now two out of the three major texts that Shishensky and others base their entire hermeneutical on are possibly dubious. And this is a huge, huge point. Because basically, when one looks at Shishensky's entire methodology, it's basically to say, aetios, nec perumenon, they have these certain senses, and then kind of shove all of the data into this framework. But really, aetios, two out of the three of the works that he quotes are dubious, and the one obviously genuine one is extremely late. And this actually follows, and there's a good reason why the language changes here, because, you know, language changes. So, yeah. So I think this just this fun little exercise here, because this is something that I didn't want to bring up in debate. I knew about it at the time. I probably might have brought it up if David was pushing on Oration 34. I decided against it, decided not to bring it up at all. I just wanted to have a more lengthy presentation, so it didn't look like I was trying to make rhetorical points by throwing out forgery at every point. But yeah, that's all with this. I hope all of you enjoyed this. If you really enjoyed it, definitely become a patron. And as always, God bless.